Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
John is out, but it's me and Dell. And our intern slash producer Cam is on the board today. You know, speaking of NIL, Barstool Athlete. This is a big deal that happened starting July 1st, where Barstool Sports decided to get in on it. And they are now the biggest group of name, image, license contributors out there. They have Jace Howard, son of Juwan Howard. He is the first athlete to sign from Michigan as a Barstool athlete. You've got, my gosh, I mean, just a ton. Michigan football junior defensive end. Oh, no, that's with the company Players Trunk. But Barstool Athlete has signed a bunch of volleyball players, baseball players. These are the ones who figure not to have as much endorsement money coming their way. But a kid who transferred from Rice to USC, he has Drew Patterson. He was at Rice in 2019, transferred over. He, you know, decent player. Shot 42.4% from the field, 38.5% from three. And Drew Peterson from USC is now one of the Barstool athletes. So Barstool's getting in the business and paying a bunch of athletes as well. We'll see exactly what that means and what they have to do for that money. But Roman Bravo Young, Penn State wrestler, he is signed with Barstool as well. So Barstool's going to make, they can be a little polarizing to some people, but they're going to make a lot of people happy by taking care of the athletes who don't necessarily figure to benefit as much from name, image, license. So that is that's a pretty interesting turn of events as well. Had you seen that over the weekend? It's way bigger roster than I even imagined.
I saw it, and Barstool, not surprisingly, they've dipped into the, hey, you're an attractive woman on Twitter or TikTok or Instagram.
I noticed that some of their, I noticed it was strategic.
Yeah. Hey, you tend to make appearances on your TikTok doing dances in bikinis or other things that would attract the male gaze. And you play D1 sports? Please, join us.
That's the influencer model.
Yes. They know what they're doing. Sure.
No, they do.
It's the wrestler that no one's ever heard of. It's also the 5'11 blonde who plays volleyball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or there's some soccer players in there,
yes,
too.
Yes. They'll make their pins. Appearances too. Barstool has a model that's been very successful. I don't imagine that this particular venture will be any less successful.
Dude, Black Bauer reminds us, you brought up earlier the Ralph Sampson and Jerry Seestein fight. The NBA was so badass back then, they didn't even get suspended for game six. Ralph Sampson literally landed a punch on Jerry Seestein. They were kicked out of the game, no suspensions back in the day. Now, Big Dobbs says he thinks the NBA, no way that the NBA would allow Kobe to play nowadays, not with Me Too movement and social media. No way. The same Kobe that left the trial in Denver and somehow played in L.A. for the Lakers in the same day, that wouldn't happen.
Because that wasn't, at the time, a civil case. It became a civil case later, and there was a settlement. But it was a criminal trial. I don't see how they let that happen. I don't see how he plays. Mm-mm. The imagery of tracking a Kobe private jet from Denver to L.A. to the state and the drive to the Staples Center, the wall-to-wall coverage that would be.
Yeah,
you think? I don't think the NBA would want that.
No, I don't think they would. No, you're probably right. It's just, I mean, there's a lot of fans of players in general who are they certainly, we've seen it enough. They'll look the other, they literally don't care. Like, there's nothing a player could do that would keep them from wanting a player to play, or where they would turn their back on a player. That's just going to be the case, but that's not the norm. So you're probably right. Normal people and media outlets would probably put a tremendous amount of pressure on a team to not play a player. It is pretty crazy, though, that actually happened. But at the time, it didn't seem that crazy. Did you notice that? Like, back in the mid-2000s, it was like, not when even mid-2000s, it was what, 2008? Around that time when that happened? Seven, eight, something like that. Yeah.
It was earlier, because remember, they lost the finals to Detroit, and then that trial came about. It was the summer.
I feel like I was on 1560 whenever it happened.
I think the Kobe trial took place in the early 2000s. July 2003. So it was, began in July 2003.
The criminal case.
Yes.
And what about the civil case? Civil case was 05.
The civil case.
Yeah, I guess it was.
Civil case was August 2004.
So when did Kobe come back with his own branding, where he was scowling and
when he was 24 instead of 8?
He got the, when was it?
Well, you mean when he changed his number?
He got the tattoo and he became Mamba.
I don't remember that. I remember it happening. I just don't remember the time frame.
Okay.
But so I can't speak on that. I just know that it was part of the, that was the end of, beginning of the end for the Lakers. So they lost to, the Spurs in the conference finals or semifinals that year, because the Spurs went on to win a title. They beat the Pistons, I think. Or who did they beat? I don't remember. Maybe the Nets. And then that trial happened. He played. The Lakers got back to the finals, lost the Pistons, and that was the end of the Lakers as we know it with Shaq.
Eric says, getting back to the Carlos Correa, I heard from a source that Jim Crane has confided that he would be willing to pay $30 million per year to Carlos Correa. But it's not going to be the long-term deal, the 10-year deal. It's not going to be that. That makes sense. If you want to be in the neighborhood for Carlos, you're going to have to get to $30 million APY, average per year. Seven, eight, nine, you know, whatever number you want to come to, the Astros are going to have to stay firm, I think. But here's what Eric says. When I looked into it, and I've also done this, by the way, I factored in teams who need a shortstop and who are willing to pay. Only the Yankees can drive Carlos's price up, assuming they don't re-sign Gleyber. The Astros have the money, with a lot of money coming off the books, though. Here's the thing. It's not about having the money to get to $300 million. The Astros fundamentally don't believe they're not going to give him a seven-year deal at $40 million a year to get him as close to $300 million as possible. They're not doing that. And anything that they do is going to have repercussions for future deals that they're going to make. So I don't think they want to get into that business model, because that's a hard model. Once you get there, you either have to drop out of that model or you have to stay in that model, which is going to push your numbers just to astronomical lengths, especially considering how many long-term contracts you're going to have to give out. And if you don't, man, if you don't play to that contract, you're going to be hard to, it's going to be hard to trade a player away who is not playing well, who has injury issues, who's on a 10-year deal. Like, the nightmare for the Padres, and by the way, no one would have thought the Padres would have fit into that mold either, but the Padres ended up paying that price. So, you know, you can say only the Yankees are going to pay it, but somebody could come out of nowhere to pay it. But when you look at teams that need shortstops, it does get a little trickier trying to slot Carlos into a $300 million deal. So, I don't know. Hopefully that pays into the Astros. We're getting the very best Carlos. This is the very best Carlos, and to see him leave after a year would be, I don't know.
It kind of sucks. It's not just him. It would be three straight years of losing the marquee free agent, and maybe one of them, like, you lost Cole, mm-hmm. you lost Springer, and then if you lose Carlos, would that be the... Now, George wasn't the marquee free agent this past year, but he was one of them. That would be 3 years in a row of losing, like, a top three free agent.
That hurts.
Yeah.
I mean,
it makes you feel like you're a small market team, even though the Astros aren't. clearly but aren't.
They got a bigger, you know. I think some of that, though, you know, money, you know, people who always point to that, that the payroll, and I'm not calling Jim Crane cheap by any stretch of the imagination. However, let's be real about this. A lot of people like to point towards what the Astros payroll is right now, but there's a finite, number one, I would say I'm pretty certain the Astros are going to get paid off from insurance for, especially if he doesn't come back and pitch it all this year, from the injury that Verlander sustained. So, from that regard, you know, yes, the number is on the books, but you do have somebody else paying into that. But when you know the numbers are coming off with Greinke and with Verlander, it's a little different than saying you're going to be at that payroll for 5 or 6 straight years that you know that's going to be the case. Now, you're getting there with Bregman and Altuve. You know, if you're willing to sign Carlos Correa to a $30 million per year deal, even if it's at 6 years, which is no chance Carlos would take $180 million. No chance when other guys have taken damn near double, you know, twice that. There's just no chance that happens. That's a little different. When you got to pay Fromber, when you give Fromber eventually a, you know, a 5-year deal at $20 million a year potentially. Now, that really starts to add up, $24 million a year, whatever. That's really going to start to add up. So, but at the same time, if you just let incrementally good players leave because of the finances, does that make you a small – it feels small market, but does that make you a small market team, or does that just mean that you are being fiscally responsible while trying to maintain competitiveness?
So far, now it's only been, now we're into year two of the Gerrit Cole thing. With Spire Tech, or the lack thereof, being an issue, it appears the Astros clearly made the right decision if we're going to bank on Gerrit Cole being this version of Gerrit Cole for the next, 7 years or so, however long his deal remains. George can barely get on the field, and that was always going to be a concern, giving a long-term deal to a 31-year-old. Carlos will be the real – not giving Carlos a deal will be the real test of making the smart baseball decision, the smart financial decision, because he's in his prime. And even if he won it 10 years, the last 3 years probably would be the ones that hurt you the most, but that's so far down the line, people don't even care. Like, what? Oh, 7 years from now, he's not any good and you're still paying him? Whatever. What about the 7 years where he's going to be a really good baseball player and we lost him? So that's going to be the one where despite the other two hurting, you could kind of understand Gerrit Cole that's a lot of money, and we're still pretty good. We still got pitchers before Verlander got hurt. You still had Greinke on the team. George, we all kind of expected it, but he's 31, so it happens to happen. The Carlos one, I think it stings the most. If it goes the way
Carlos
it could
hurts,
go.
Because we've been waiting for him to be our Superman, and it looked like it wasn't going to happen, and all of a sudden – in the postseason last year, and then this year, he's followed up on it. He stayed healthy so far. And it's like, oh, man, he just got that work done, and now we're going to have to lose him to another suitor.
Yeah.
Like Carlos, just when Carlos is starting to get hot.
Do you think
all of a sudden he leaves us for some other
person? So the Astros put in the work to build that body?
Yeah.
And now he's going to leave?
We put in the work while Carlos is coming up, like you're the high school girlfriend of a guy, and he becomes a pro athlete, and then he takes off and leaves you, and you feel like, hey, I'm the one that taught him how to do, you know, to use the right silverware at a formal setting. I'm the one that showed him this move. I'm the one that did this.
Broadened his horizons
yeah.
with food.
I did all this, and now
this dude used to just eat the $1 spicy chickens from McDonald's. Now he has a wide palate.
Yeah, don't start running up to the foie gras game now and telling that to your next girl. Well, don't even start.
That's why Trevor.
Like, I remember tracking Deshaun's, like when he was in when he was coming out. So I'll look at players' social media, get a kind of feel for who they are. And Deshaun had this, like, it was a goody two shoes Instagram, and here's his girlfriend, and here he is with his girlfriend's family, and all this. And I mean, Deshaun was spotless, like spotless. And then I noticed that I think he was still with her when he was a rookie. And then I noticed, on to the next one. I don't want to get Deshaun's ex-girlfriend by Carlos Correa.
You can get RG3 ex-wife.
Yeah, I don't want RG3's ex-wife.
He did the same thing.
Wes Welker's ex-wife.
Did Wes Welker do it too?
Welker upgraded after he hit that Patriot money.
Okay.
Well, I didn't say upgrade may be an ugly term, but I'm just saying it happens.
Yeah, they're not products, Lance.
No, but I don't want Carlos to do that to us where he's like,
it's not an upgrade. Well. He's not going to join it. He may make more money, but he's not going to join a better franchise. Like, what? I mean, the Dodgers have been consistently great. The Astros have been, too. What team that he could join who's going to be willing to pay him can say, oh, that they're better than the
Astros?
I've
got a friend who got divorced and married someone else, and it was a disaster.
Because they were a downgrade?
It was a disaster. No, it was a disaster financially, business-wise, personally, across the board. And I just want to share that story personally with Carlos if I ever get the chance to keep him here. I want to say, Carlos, listen, it's not about the money, which is always fun for somebody who doesn't have their money or access to their money to say to them, it's not about the money. Listen, I want you to take $100 million less than you could make, okay, and stay here in Houston where you're happy. Daniela might be unhappy somewhere. Do you want to risk it? Do you want to risk maybe the poisoning, the air pollution in New York? Do you want that to happen? No. People randomly get punched in the face in New York now, walking down the street. I don't want to see that happen to you. Well, I don't want you to get randomly punched in the face. You see how they're doing Gerrit Cole now? Don't go to the Yankees, Carlos.
Is anyone going to mention to him that, Carlos, have you noticed that like your house is in danger of flooding every couple weeks?
No, don't say that.
Don't say that.
Carlos, listen. Your house clearly has been built up. You're at a very high elevation, so you can't possibly flood. And it looks like weather's starting to really get milder here in Houston. That's something I've noticed, too, is that we're starting to have mild winter, mild summers.
Mild summers, huh?
Yesterday it was 86. That's very mild for July. How
hard was it raining yesterday?
Yeah, but you also don't have to water plants. You don't have to water grass.
You think watering plants is a
watering
problem
grass,
considering?
If you want to keep your water bill lower,
hey, Carlos,
is that something you're factoring in?
While we're discussing...
You want a yard, Carlos? Great. Don't live in New York.
While we're discussing why you should pick a place, does Carlos know that it's supposed to rain for the next 8 days here?
Rain? Okay, define rain. Rain to me means what? You mean rain and then you can get out and do whatever you want once the grass has been watered, basically?
Well, according to my app on the trusty iPhone, I'm talking about thunderstorms type of rain.
Yeah, so we're going to be plush and green this whole time. And you know what it gives you a chance to do? Stay inside and make love with your wife.
I don't think that should be part of the pitch.
I know, that's part of the pitch. I'm still spitballing a pitch.
Okay.
That's not part of it. You bringing up rain isn't going to help.
I'm just telling you that everyone has negative factors. We got to overcome
He might
ours.
Like rain. Have you ever heard rain on the roof? Sounds great. It's easy to get to sleep to. You ever thought about that, Carlos? You going to have that in New York? Or are you going to have that in where else? Who's going to pay Carlos? Name so Paul's. The Giants?
The Giants?
Yeah. Would the Giants give him money?
I don't think so.
Name a team that's going to give him all this money.
Do the Rangers need a shortstop?
Do you want to go there and play outdoors baseball? Well, not anymore. They stole our design.
Yeah.
Would you want to live there, Carlos? No. Silver Boot. That's like going from Crypt to Blood. You can't do that. Go from Astro to Ranger? Come on. I'll get this taken care of.
You'll figure it out.
Trust me, Carlos will not be going anywhere if I get a hold of him. 10-19 on the bench.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
NBA Finals jump off tonight. Are you watching? I'm going to watch. I do a sports talk show, so obviously I'm going to watch. But, I have a legitimate interest in this one. I'll be honest with you. Had it been the Clippers with no Kawhi, it would have hurt my interest level. I'm into the Suns team. I like watching them play. Not a bunch of star potential. I mean, I like Ayton, but he's not a star. He's a good young player.
Improving big man.
Chris Paul is one of those guys, and probably it's one of those things where you get like, an old school dude trying to earn his place at the table of players who are championship players. Maybe it's going to be something like that. I think it's something like that for me. And just getting a little extra insight into Chris Paul a couple years ago, I really just increased the respect I have for him. But just the way he's made every team better, I think you can't help but root for him unless you just don't like him as the way he is on the court, which is not always likable.
I don't think Chris Wojciechowski is going to fare well for the common fan.
Don't bring up Wojo. He's the worst.
Yeah, Chris.
Like, I hated Hurley, but because Hurley was on a Duke team I hated, but at least Hurley had some game. Wojo, like, Wojciechowski Duke is some of the worst Duke. That's also Greg Newton Duke. Like, that was that's where Krzyzewski got that back injury he couldn't come back from.
You want me
to
call him Chris Paulus? What do you want from me?
Ooh.
Look, for the casual observer who just tunes in, oh, the finals are on, I'll watch this. If Chris Paul gets into his Chris Paul stuff like he was in the middle of what he was doing in game six in a closeout game, the flopping, the taunting, the applauding technicals and flagrants for the other team, asking guys to get thrown out, common basketball fan ain't going to walk away loving Chris Paul.
No.
If Chris Paul is his elite Chris Paul self, people going to walk away, look, that I hate that guy. He's not – he's a bulldog. That he won't quit, but he ain't likable on the court.
Unless he plays for you.
Sure. When Chris Paul was a Clipper, did you enjoy Chris Paul?
No, but I thought is he as flagrant with some of the stuff now as he was then?
I don't know if anyone did it, but a cut up of his actions in Game Six, you're gonna want. Ugh, why am I rooting for this guy? Of course, he was going against a very unlikable team, the Clippers, with DeMarcus Cousins and Patrick Beverley, so it kind of balanced it out. You pick your poison in that one, but as far as he will walk away from this series of the guys who play the most. If you just watch it for how these guys respond to things, he'll be your least likable player. But you have a vested interest in seeing him win. But for the common person, get out of here. Like, if you don't have any background information on him, people are going to watch this guy and go, could I root for Drew Holiday, please? Because...
we'll see how it goes. I am interested to watch... the finals tonight, but I'm also interested to watch the Astros. So the Astros, right now, the Astros are doing what they do, which is they're streaking a little bit, but it's usually the good kind of streaking. Usually they streak in the right direction, but occasionally we know that they'll have one of those random times where they get swept by the Orioles or the Tigers or the Rangers, but that has not been the case. Now, the Oakland A's are a team that has not been they've not been playing their best baseball as of late. After playing red hot, it seemed like the Astros couldn't make up any ground on them during a hot streak. The A's now over the last, this has been a run now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So the A's are 5-10 in their last 15. Not great baseball. That's why they went from 2.5 games up. Even during the win streak, the Astros are having a hard time gaining ground, and now the Astros are 3.5 up, and you've got Fromber on the bump today, then you've got Garcia, and then you've got McCullers, and then into the series against the Yankees, the Astros are going to be pitching. I'll give you that lineup here. So you've got, for the next three, we've got Fromber, Garcia, McCullers, then you got Odorizzi, Greinke, oh yeah, and then Fromber, because we're back to a five-man rotation. So Fromber will hit it tonight, and then he will hit it again July 11th on that Sunday game against New York. That is a TBS game. You got a Fox game on Saturday against New York. Greinke is pitching for the Astros, and then, of course, you can catch all of them on local television. They're all 7-10 starts, and I'm looking at ticket prices, and man, you can still get great tickets for the A series. I mean, this is going to be a time to take them, because obviously when the Yankees come to town, it's going to jump up. But man, if you could put a sweep on the Yankees, and you've got, I mean, it's hard to argue Valdez, Garcia, McCullers, although Garcia has been a little bumpier as of late, but you're still in great, great shape. How about Garcia right now, 6-5 with a 3.14? But last time out, four innings pitch, he gave up four earned runs. But we know he got squeezed by C.B. Buckner in that game, and he gave all of his runs up in the first inning. If the Astros could sweep the A's and go 6.5 up headed into the break, or even anywhere near that into the All-Star break, wow, what a run that would be. It would also put them in contention for the top team in Major League Baseball. How much of this did you expect from the Astros? I thought it was possible, but did you expect for them to be one of the top four teams? They're number three now, but one of the top four teams in baseball
without a clear frontline guy starting, I did question it because you had some questions about whether when Fromber was hurt, remember, and we weren't sure if he would be back when he got hurt in spring training. And the McCullers thing was always a question mark considering his injury history. But the fact that they've gotten the starts they've got out of McCullers and Fromber return so quickly, it makes this more understandable. They just have hit, struck gold, hit oil, whatever you want to call it, on low salary starting pitching. It's changed the direction and future for the franchise. Because when we talk about Justin Verlander and when Gerrit Cole left, it was like, how long can this run stay together without going out and getting another guy? And they gave Verlander the extension, and he's pitched one game for $66 million. That's been talked about quite a bit on here. But able to find Luis Garcia, Fromber, we knew kind of where Urquidy was based on his performance in the World Series when the backs were against the wall. He came out and did his thing. The fact that the young pitchers are who they are really extends the run, but for this season, I think McCullers being around and being what he's been has kind of bolstered the season and kind of surprised me, because I just assumed at some point he would miss an extended amount of time.
Nice. Once was
illness, right?
Once was, it wasn't even protocol. It was just illness.
Yeah. So the fact that their young pitchers are still outperforming expectations, maybe not anymore, maybe the expectations are just there now. That is a bit of a surprise, considering you didn't really have a top frontline starter going into the year, at least not established one.
Yeah, and we joke about McCormick, but I mean, having a guy that has provided double-digit home runs out of nowhere, I mean, that's kind of a big deal too.
Yeah.
I mean, Yordan he's missed some time, yet he's still got unbelievable, unbelievable production. But having Yuli, I think Yuli and Altuve also going back to their, I mean, really, it's there's so many. Yuli and Altuve getting back to their form after some bumpy postseason work last year. And then Ryan Pressly. You know, not enough can be said about Ryan Pressly. While the bullpen has been a disaster in general, relative to some of the games they have lost and caused some issues, Ryan Pressly sitting there with a .83 whip, an ERA is in the mid-ones, I mean, with 14 saves. There have been some saves that weren't clean 1-2-3 innings and that got a little bit dicey, but for the most part, that guy has been on point. And having a closer who can actually, you know, they've got to work on setup, man, and just having another arm in there that is more consistent than a Brooks Raley, but having that closer bolstered by the return of Yuli into hitting prominence and bringing back Uncle Mike. Before they signed Michael Brantley, you really had some concerns.
Felt like the end almost. When George out, Michael Brantley
it
out.
It was toward, I remember the Michael Brantley sign, like, what? They signed Brantley again?
Because it was thought he was a Blue Jay.
Yep.
There was a report was that he was a Blue Jay. What do you do? Where do you slot Luis Garcia in this bullpen now? Do you want him as a setup guy? Do you want them to treat him like Christian Javier, where he's tagged with someone?
I think Javier is more the setup guy, and I think he's more tagged with somebody. He's a guy that you have ready to pitch at any time and to go get you three, maybe four innings, maybe even close the game out. If you've got a 5-2 lead, don't mess around with it, and you got a guy who's at 56 pitches, let's keep rolling. Let's keep rolling with Garcia. So, yeah, Garcia. If Garcia heads to the pen, I use him in the role where they had Javier. And they've already talked about this. Javier at some point is going to have to become a standard reliever, meaning he's the second best arm you have behind Pressly, I guess. Use him in that role as setup man then, more often. or second closer if you need to. 10:32 here on the bench. We got a half hour to go, and I'm going to get to offensive and defensive rookies of the year. I got an offensive rookie of the year column I have to finish, so I want to see how you would rate these guys. 10:33 on the bench.
Yeah, no, when the whistle goes.
Real fun. Sports. ESPN 97.5. Is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
It's 10:36. You know, I told you I got to write an article. I hate when they make me do work in the summer. But I got to do work. I got to do my offensive rookie of the year article. So my offensive rookie of the year article is coming out. I have to turn it in today. Here's how I rank them. Now, let me tell you, here's what the odds say. I'll tell you what the odds say. The odds, according to sportsbettingdime.com, and they update it through time. Like they started it in April, and then April 23rd, April 29th, May 3rd, and now June 14th is the last odds that we had. Here's what it looks like. The favorite, who do you think the favorite is?
For which one? Offensive rookie of the year?
Offensive rookie of the year in the NFL.
Is it Trevor Lawrence?
Yeah. It's got to be. It's Trevor Lawrence. Is 2.8 to 1. 100 wins you 280. Second is Justin Fields. Would you have guessed that?
I would have given him some thought because if he is a quarterback, even though the Bears are steadfast in saying this is Andy Dalton's job, Justin Fields, I guess, has a preseason to see if he can take that away from him. Who's the first non-quarterback? Who's the highest non-quarterback on the list?
Well, the highest non-quarterback is Kyle Pitts at plus 975.
He's playing with an established quarterback, so that helps. He will legitimately be the second weapon behind Calvin Ridley.
Right? One would have to think.
Yeah.
Julio Jones is gone.
So he'll get targets.
But that's what brings me to this point. Trey Lance is third at 625. I don't even know that there's a guarantee that he gets much playing time this year.
Yeah, I don't think.
I feel like he's going to take the Pat Mahomes model. Zach Wilson is fourth at 763. Or plus 763. 100 to win 763. And then comes Kyle Pitts. And then after Kyle Pitts is Najee Harris, followed closely by Mac Jones, followed by Ja'Marr Chase, followed by Devontae Smith, and then Jaylen Waddle. Now, here's how I have it. In my column, in my article, I'm putting it like this. I've got it. Now, let me just tell you some historical facts. Three players have won the Heisman and Offensive Rookie of the Year in back-to-back seasons. Only Kyler Murray, Cam Newton, and Eddie George have done it since 1990. So only three have done that. No tight end or offensive lineman has ever won the award. So obviously for Kyle Pitts, that's a concern if you consider him a tight end. There have been just three wide receivers win Offensive Rookie of the Year over the last 22 years. That's it. Only three win Offensive Rookie of the Year awards over the last 22 years. Last season was the first time since 06 with Vince Young did it that a player from the AFC won the award. How about that long streak for the AFC winning? Justin Herbert.
It's like their Super Bowl streak when the NFC was beating them down in the 80s and 90s.
So with that said, here's how I have it. Trevor Lawrence won. You know who I've got number two?
Not a quarterback, is it?
Najee Harris. You know, running backs, this was a heavily won. This used to be a running back award.
Mm-hmm.
And running backs still win the award. I think the Steelers are going to give him tons of carries. I think he's going to get plenty of catches out of the backfield.
Is the Steelers' offensive line good enough for?
That's a question. But I think he's going to put the numbers up there. So I made Najee Harris two. I made Justin Fields three. And I recognize that this is purely based upon whether or not how quickly he becomes a starter. But I think it's going to be fairly quickly. So I went Justin Fields 3. I went Kyle Pitts 4th for the things you talked about. So he is going to be the number 2 wide receiver, even if he's considered a tight end. He's great in the red zone, so he's likely to get touchdown catches. He has a veteran quarterback, so he's got that going for him. A pretty good offensive line for the quarterback. He's got another wide receiver to take pressure off of him, and he's in an offense that should, that I think should be a factor this year.
Yeah, I was thinking about how difficult it would be for someone not a quarterback, and I went back to last year. Like, Justin Jefferson was ridiculous, and he still didn't even come close to topping Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert had 41 votes to Justin Jefferson's 9. You think that they were that big of a difference between those two?
They were even.
Yeah.
That was even. For a wide receiver to come in with that kind of year as a rookie, that's pretty irregular for him to put those numbers up. For it to be that big a split was kind of a joke.
Yeah, so it speaks to it being a quarterback award. So taking Najee Harris is, I don't mind it, but the quarterbacks are going to have to fall on their faces if last year's any indication. Because do I expect Najee Harris to put up the same type of numbers from the running back position in terms of production that Justin Jefferson did at wide receiver? And it wasn't even close to vote.
But remember now, he threw for 4,300 yards, 4,336, and had 31 touchdowns.
Understood.
Can Trevor Lawrence get to that number? Can Justin Fields get to that number? I don't think either guy can get to 30 touchdowns. Well, they can, but remember, that's Mike Williams and
Keenan Allen,
and that was a pretty good cast of receivers that he had to throw to.
I'm talking about the gap. The gap is so large. That sure, he had a really good year, but so did Justin Jefferson, particularly from a position that's difficult to do that at as a rookie. And he was outstanding. He was not just the best rookie receiver; he's one of the best receivers in the game last year, and it wasn't even close. So, a quarterback would have to be. So you have to think: Can Najee Harris go for what's the equivalent? Najee Harris going
Najee's
for 1,500 yards and another 400 receiving, 500 receiving.
How many touchdowns did Justin have?
I'll find it.
I think Najee's going to have to go 1,200 yards rushing, 15 touchdowns, 400 yards receiving, and 6 touchdowns.
So he's going to have to be one of the best backs in football to get it done.
You tell me. Yeah, he's going to have to end up with. I think he's going to have to end up with 20 total touchdowns, unless this is how quickly this could change. Andy Dalton is the starter for the first 7 games. If Andy Dalton's the starter for the first 7 games, which is entirely possible, remember now, Bill Lazor, the offense coordinator, was with Andy Dalton in Cincinnati. He's got a direct relationship with Andy Dalton. So it's possible that Andy Dalton could be entrenched as a starter longer than expected. Is it possible that Trey Lance sits on the bench for much of the year? Absolutely. That's very, very possible. So if you take those quarterbacks away, do you think Mac Jones is going to beat out Cam Newton? I do not. Not in the short term. So then we get to the last one being Zach Wilson. Is Zach Wilson going to have the type of season? Like, could Zach Wilson put a season together that would have beat Justin Jefferson? I don't think so. If it was Zach Wilson versus Justin Jefferson,
no.
I don't see him putting that season together with the Jets.
No.
Now, they were just 6-9, 6-9-1, the Chargers, so it's not like they had a great record, but just saying there is a chance that Trevor Lawrence, but even with 27 touchdowns and 12 interceptions and 4,100 yards passing, which is still a very good season, that would probably beat anything that Najee Harris could put together.
Yeah, I just think they want to give it to a quarterback. The narrative for them is great when a rookie quarterback does well. And if Trevor Lawrence starts fulfilling the potential everyone's placed on him since he enrolled in Clemson, that awards is his to lose, and that's why he's the favorite that he is. And I respect picking Najee. I just don't know if that Steelers offensive line is going to give him the opportunities to reach those numbers.
I just couldn't go with Kyle Pitts at 2, and I think Najee is going to get a lot of carries. And I put Zach Wilson 5, Ja'Marr Chase 6. Because of the Burrow factor, Joe could end up really targeting him a lot. I put Devontae Smith 7 because I think people are still kind of sleeping on him.
Even with Jalen throwing him the football?
Yeah, just because he can catch a lot of shorter stuff too. I think he can adjust his game, where Ja'Marr Chase's game is going to need to be more down the field. Trey Lance I made 8th out of respect to a quarterback position and that offense in case he does get a shot. Travis Etienne, who is not in their top 10, I had to put Travis in there because I'm like, man, Travis Etienne's got a shot too. if we're talking about running backs having a chance, and then Mac Jones, I put 10 because of the quarterback situation. I didn't put Jalen Waddle in there.
It's disrespectful.
I know, and I feel like I should have him in, but wide receivers don't win it.
What if he could? Does the return factor, him being a returner, should add to it?
Yeah, it should, even though you don't see as many returns anymore.
No.
I made my dark horse candidate Javonte Williams from Denver. I think Javonte could end up being a problem for people this year. That guy's a baller.
Just glad he's out of the ACC, honestly.
10:45, one segment to go for Dell and I right here on the bench. And then coming up next, we will have Charlie Polillo, I think.
Did you just do an accent? Did you do an impression right there? A slight impression of Charlie?
Just a mannerism, more than anything.
Charlie. No, that's
Charlie
an impression.
Charlie Polillo. That's just a
Charlie should be happy. He's got one more hockey game to watch, even though the Islanders aren't in it. He's a hockey dude.
Yeah, he's got another one.
Yeah, because, you know, Montreal extended the series, so he should be happy about that.
There you go. 10:46 on the bench.
HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more.
You are listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Well, this is the last segment, Dell, before John is back tomorrow. Get some golf talk in.
Great.
No, can't wait for John to come back. We got a lot to get to. I can't wait to tell him I heard that Jim Crane will pay $30 million for Carlos. It won't. I guess it won't matter if you don't go 10 seasons in. So this is crazy. $300 million. It's one thing when you have a 6 or 7 year deal. Damn, 10, 14 years. Like, I am never going to be okay with that kind of contract. It's just stupid. You have to be healthy the whole time. You have to hope that guy's in the right mind frame the whole time. They have to produce all the time or they become a... We thought Ryan Anderson's deal was untradeable. Mess around and give somebody a 14-year deal and they came up with a back injury. See how tradable that contract is. Untradeable. We talked about the championship, the NBA championship, Phoenix versus the Bucks, and Giannis is going to play. I had a couple of odds I wanted to ask you about here. And pull them up from Jimmy Shapiro, sent these over to us. MVP, finals MVP. Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Giannis, Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, Brooke Lopez, and Ayton are up there. Now, Lopez is a throwaway. I'll grant you that. Does Ayton have any chance of winning MVP, you think?
No.
He's not on the ball.
If the Suns win, it won't be because... Well, I shouldn't say that. He won't have done enough to surpass a Booker or a Paul. I mean, he will play a huge factor, I imagine, if they win, but he ain't going to win the MVP. When was the last time a big man won the MVP? Do you remember? The finals MVP?
A true big man?
Yeah.
Was it Shaq?
Yeah, it had to be Shaq.
That long ago. So. And it had to have been in the early 2000s. He didn't win it when Wade won it with him. Wade was the MVP that year.
I mean, was KG an MVP?
That go to Pierce or Kevin Garnett? 2000. When did they win?
2008? Mm-hmm.
It might have been KG. 2000 finals.
Oh, my God. No, it was Pierce.
Yeah.
Dude, the last big that won, I think Cam is going to be right. Because I'm all the way into 2007, 2006. Tim Duncan.
Tim Duncan in 05.
05, Tim Duncan.
And then?
And then you had Duncan, Shaq, Tim Duncan.
Then Jordan.
Dream, you know, between the Jordans. Yeah, you had a bunch of them.
Yeah, so Nowitzki is a 7-footer, but not the big man that we're talking about, at least not the game we're talking about. So no, I don't think Ayton's winning an MVP. That's if the Suns win it, it's going to Booker or
Well, Paul's or a favorite Paul. Over Booker. They've got Giannis as a favorite over Middleton.
Yeah, because Giannis goes, well, Giannis would have to play, but Giannis is a 30-12 guy.
Could Giannis miss the first two games?
Well, it depends
and
on
still
how
win it?
Well, if
Middleton don't show up all the time.
it's kind of hard for him.
Yeah.
He's like off and on.
If he's going to produce a 6-for-22
but
in a game.
He ain't winning the finals without Middleton playing
well.
He's going
to have to play well, but let's say Giannis probably won't play tonight and probably won't play. There's a chance he won't play in game two.
Uh-huh.
So let's say I think because just the Suns aren't a dominant team, the Bucks could find a way to win a game without Giannis. But let's say they're down 0-2 and the Bucks find a way to come back and win. If Giannis comes back and they win the series, Giannis has won the MVP.
Yeah.
Now if they get out to a surprising 2-0 lead, then all bets are off. Like if Middleton has gone for 35 and averaged 35 over two games and they steal two or even steal one, then it becomes a different ballgame because Middleton has set the standard that he can carry this team to at least a win in the finals.
At 6-1, to me, Chris Middleton is a play. I don't see Holiday at 10-1. I don't think he can shine in enough games where he could win an MVP.
And people will like to point to, can we find a guy that we wouldn't expect? The only time that has happened is Iguodala. Iguodala in 15 won it because he guarded LeBron and all those things and did multiple things. But he's the only one who won a finals being one of the other guys. So placing your money on a non-star is a losing bet. Another reason why you don't choose Ayton.
There's no hope for PJ Tucker?
No.
PJ's not enough. Let's see. Cam Matthews. No, not on here. Highest scoring game by any one team, 124.5 points.
I'm going to go lower. I think unless there's this out-and-out blowout where a team just makes 23s, the final.
Who's the team? If one team gets there, who would it be?
I think the Suns at home could put a performance up like that if they just get rolling. Maybe the Bucks are down early in a game one. There's no Giannis. Let's pack it in. I can see it happening that way.
Any game be below 90 points? A team score
I can
less
see a game
90.
Seven. If it gets to
they
a game
both
seven.
They both play with some tempo.
I think a game seven could get that way because those games generally grind to a halt and possessions. And the Bucks don't appear to have a go-to. We saw them in tight games. The offense got clunky. They had to eke out and find ways to beat the Nets, a debilitated Nets team. I could see a game seven, one team scoring under 90, just because of exhaustion, being tight, the importance of the game. But before then, I don't know.
Highest scoring game by any one player, 37.5 points.
Finals. Do we have someone capable? Giannis.
Devin Booker.
That would be my.
He
thought.
Could. I would have gone with Giannis.
Paul's
if he was
not going to get to. Paul will
he,
not approach
he
that
went
number
for 40,
again.
He went for 41 in the closeout.
That's
game.
What I'm saying. But that was he's not approaching that number. It took a bonker. He had 31 in the second half.
37. Middleton's not the type of that guy. I mean,
I think Devin Booker's going to show out in the finals this year.
I think he'll have a good series, and they're going to need it for him to win. I don't know why I say I think he will. He could have one. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But certainly he needs to play well for them to win. But 37, you said the number?
37.5.
Just for one game?
One team. Yeah, I could see that.
One game.
One game.
Yeah.
30 to get one guy gets a 38?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see it.
I think Devin Booker's the only hope for it, though.
Giannis points per game for the series, 27.5. That's a bold number, considering you don't know where he is right now.
Well, when he plays, he's 30-plus, but mm-hmm. I don't know what he's going to look like. I can't make that bet right
12
now.
12.5 rebounds?
Once again, dependent on health.
Chris Middleton points per game, 24.5.
He will get up
over
a lot.
Under.
He will get up a lot of shots. I'll go over. Like when with Giannis out, he could go like 8-for-24 and still get close because he's getting to the free throw
threes
line.
Threes and free throw line.
Yeah.
Drew Holiday's over-under is 18.5.
Drew, under.
Because of how the Nets series freaks you out about him a little bit.
I know.
But he wasn't nearly as bad against the Hawks.
No. He had some moments.
Yeah.
And plus, I don't know about under Cam
if Giannis is missing, guy.
Yeah, if Giannis is missing time, he could be up around 27.
He went for 19.
Mess up all the numbers.
They're too inconsistent for me.
To close out the series, he went for 19, 25, and 27.
Chris Paul's 18.
I would probably go under that. I think he...
That's a good number.
Because his impact, that's a tough one. His impact is far greater than just his ability to put the ball in the bucket.
Assists per game, 9. These are pretty good numbers.
Yeah. Well, I would probably say under that, too.
Devin Booker, 26.5, Cam, what do you think?
For the whole series.
For the whole series.
Averaging over. I say over.
I like that, too.
I think he's going to – he might be – he's my favorite to win finals MVP. I think this is a legacy-stamping finals for Devin Booker.
And here is, if you really first technical foul of the series, Suns minus 250, Bucks plus 175. They're saying the Suns are going to get you the tech.
They've got a Crowder. They've got a Paul. They got a couple. Mm-hmm. Who could get you one?
The rest of them are a bunch of finesse dudes, though.
Don't even.
Who's going to get it for the Bucks?
PJ.
Yeah.
PJ might not like. PJ's probably going to guard Devin Booker. Who's he going to guard?
No.
You think they're going to put Drew Holiday on him?
Yeah, I don't think. Who's guarding PJ's quick enough. Holiday. Oh, no.
If Holiday's.
No, I think Middleton guards. But you don't want Middleton having to chase him up and down.
Middleton and on Bridges.
Yeah, I'm sure PJ will be on Devin Booker.
So then PJ will be on Book. Ooh.
And that's what I'm talking about, technical fouls. He may get upset with the call.
But Book doesn't get extra on the court.
Not Book. He's not gonna... No, I'm talking about PJ not liking a call going
Oh, just a tech on it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Going to the free throw line. Yeah, yell at the ref. Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I could see that. Last one, correct series result. I'm going to go Suns.
I got Suns in six.
I'm going to go Suns 7. Suns in 7 is... 14-5, it's the favorite, along with Suns and 5.
What's the number?
You want to make the most money? Bucks sweep.
Of course, well, yeah.
25-1. Bucks winning 4 out of 5 is 11-1. That's not crazy.
Without
Suns
Giannis?
Sweep is 8-1.
You think they can win 4 out of 5?
That's what I'm saying. We don't know. Maybe Giannis is back. They steal game one and Giannis is back in game two?
Ooh. If they steal game one, I don't see Giannis or no Giannis. I don't think they're winning game two. The Bucks don't have foot on the gas. They don't have the. They're not a foot on the gas bury you type team.
First two games are in Phoenix.
Yeah, the Bucks don't have that energy. Well, they'll. Oh, we got to go. What are you doing?
I know. That's what I'm saying. You're just hogging up Charlie's show.
That's not on me.
Thanks for Cam for stepping up and handling the producer details. Intern did a nice job as producer. Thanks to Dell for stepping in. John will be back tomorrow. You guys have a great day, everybody.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save.